is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The mayoralty race, New York City, after a pandemic year in which New York was reduced to empty streets, I walked them. No trash in the streets. I saw it because there were no people. A subway system that was highly questionable given security. And the office buildings filling the Starbucks, no more, empty and remain empty. And yet, a mayoralty race in all of these turbulent conditions. I welcome Harry Siegel, a columnist for the New York Daily News and my guide on this race because there are so many candidates and there are new rules. Also, Harry is the op-ed editor at the Daily Beast. Harry, a very good evening to you. We begin with the new rules, the protocols. The first that's most obvious is that it's June. They're voting June 22nd. And what I always loved about New York primaries was they were in September. So how has that changed things before we get to rank voting? Good evening to you, Harry.
Hey, good evening, John. We're going to find out how it changed things. For my whole life, the primary had been in September, and then the generals in November, of course. And so that's a pretty compressed window for the main race. It's in June now, and we don't know how many people are going to tune out, how many people are really paying attention, how many people are going to fill out their whole ranked choice ballot, which we'll talk about, which may make a difference. If a bunch of people only fill out their number ones and just don't know past that for the mayor or all the down ballot races, that could make a big difference. So it's a big question how this plays out. And of course, most of this race happened during a pandemic when most of the mayoral candidates, except Andrew Yang, were trying not to campaign in person all that much until very recently. Yang did and ended up having to isolate himself and then getting the virus. So he lost some time, but he sucked up lots of TV. Whereas many of the other candidates, early voting started, the end is here. And in some ways, it feels like they're just getting started. And so are a lot of voters.
The second what is new is ranked voting. You've mentioned it and you've explained it to me several weeks very patiently. And I still don't get it entirely. You have 5 choices, 8 choices, 12 choices, and you do it in order of your first and second. It's very peculiar, Harry, because most of us have a candidate and we decide on the basis of who we're voting against. How does ranked voting change the old American style, I'm going to vote against?
It's a little dizzying for all the citywide races. Notably, this does not include the Manhattan district attorney race, which is technically a state county race. For all the citywide races, so mayor and controller and city council members and judges, you get to rank your top 5 choices. And the way this works is your vote goes to your number one pick. But if nobody gets 50%, whoever has the least votes is eliminated. And if that person is your number one pick, your vote then goes to your number two pick, and then they count again and see if anyone hits 50%. If not, bottom person's eliminated, third pick, and so on, up through 5. So how does this affect how people are going to vote and whether or not they're going to, you know, vote against their enemy or the one candidate that, well, we really don't know. We know that in smaller cities that have done this, and there's a bunch of Cambridge and San Francisco and others, that you end up with the same sort of weird front-runner effect that this is supposed to protect against, where, you know, a lot of people sort of reluctantly vote for the person they think is winning, which may be Eric Adams right now in New York, even though they don't have to. And if you could live with Eric Adams, couldn't live with Andrew Yang, right? You should vote for the candidates in the order you really want them. If you think Maya Wiley would be a great mayor, put her number one. If she's eliminated, your vote will move to Eric Adams if he's your number two. So that's how it works or how it's supposed to work. In practice, we're all about to find out.
Is it necessary to vote 5 times? Can you just check off one name and turn your ballot in?
Yes, but if you do that and your person is eliminated, you don't have a say in who the winner is. Whereas if you keep going down the ballot, you do. Notably, by the way, this is also the system for all the other races, right? So if you're just catching up on your city council race, and in my district, there's 8 people running, 5 of them significantly, right? I'm curious how many people are actually going to fill out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 there, as opposed to just, you know, this is the person I like, this is who I'm voting for. We're going to see. I'm guessing there's going to be a lot, especially down ballot, of people just putting in one choice and then giving in, and that this may end up costing some candidates and benefiting others.
campaign financing. You've told me that there's been campaign financing provided by the city before, but with these many candidates, has that changed the campaign financing system, or has it in some way introduced a new element to a citywide campaign?
The city has had a campaign finance system that gives big matching funds on small contributions. So basically gives you $6 for every dollar someone gives, up to like 250, with all sorts of variables thrown in, but that's the baseline for a long time. The catch is that when this started, you had Bloomberg running, who was a billionaire and outside of this system, and it changed the math for everyone who was in it. Then in 2013, Bloomberg was gone, but people hadn't fully caught up with the new math, except for Bill de Blasio. So where everyone else was playing within this system that meant all the top candidates were going to max out and have the same amount of money, he ended up with all these PACs spending on his behalf. His cousin, Wilhelm, who ran Unite, the big labor union at the time, helped. This weird group that was concerned with carriage horses and their health, they ended up helping. And so he had dark outside money when no one else did. This year, 7 of the 8 top candidates and all of the leading ones have PACs spending on their behalf. So you nominally have this very meritorious system that allows everyone to raise money and levels the playing field. But then you have all this big dark money that's playing out in so far unknown ways. And the last thing about that matching fund system, John, is between that and ranked choice voting, the candidates who are not going to win have no reason to back out. And of course, their staffers and consultants and so on want them to keep spending. And you can say, you're not wasting your vote on me, even if you don't think you're going to win because of ranked choice. You know that for every dollar you raise, you get $6 to spread around. Or in fact, 8, because one of the candidates, Ray McGuire, who's a banker, stepped out of the system so he could raise more. So it's created between that ranked choice, switching to June, just a very complicated, messy field with too many candidates, not a lot of narrative clarity, and a lot of New Yorkers just tuning in and trying to get up to speed on what's happening and why and who they want leading the city for the next 4 and probably 8 years.
Do the PACs have the rules that I'm familiar with on the national scale where they can't be for a candidate, they have to be for a theme, even, and if that theme is associated with a candidate, it's okay. Is that the same ruling?
Basically, yes, and they have to disclose their top donors in their advertising, although, of course, you know, that's in small print at the end. So if you can tell the difference between an Andrew Yang for New York ad and, like, an Andrew Yang PAC ad, you're smarter and paying more attention than I am, for instance.
And so what we have are all these new protocols and now the candidates. Let's begin with your explanation of what's happened in the last week since we talked. I saw was the puzzle about where Eric Adams sometimes rests his head, sometimes. And there was Borough Hall in Brooklyn. There was an address in Bedford-Stuyvesant, which is a neighborhood in Brooklyn. And then there was an address in New Jersey, but it's on the Hudson River, so it's practically New York City. Is that an issue in the campaign, and how so?
So it has been an issue in the campaign, as other candidates have pointed to this, that he has this condo in Jersey that he co-owns with his girlfriend, and maybe he lives there. He insists he lives in a house he's owned for a long time in Bed-Stuy and shares with his son, who actually grew up and went to school in New Jersey, but that's his own story, separate from him. Nobody has landed a really clean shot on this. It points to all of these questions about Eric Adams, about how murky and mysterious his finances have seemed, and how he can't seem to directly answer basic questions about his own life. Adams has responded there's not a legal issue here, which is probably right, insists that he does live in New York, and has said that the people asking questions about this are basically doing the same thing that happened to Obama with the birther stuff, which is just patently not so, but is a very strong political defense here that they're coming at me because I'm black. I don't think that's the case, but none of the other candidates have managed to land a really clean shot that's changed the dynamics of this race, which from the polling out this week shows Adams clearly ahead with Maya Wiley and Catherine Garcia doing okay and probably still having paths to victory and maybe 20% of voters still undecided. A lot's going to come down to who turns out and how they fill out their ballots. Early voting just started, and so far turnout has been very low. In 2013, it was very low, and that really helped de Blasio. you know, sort of inched through. He got just over 250,000 votes in the Democratic primary and basically got to be mayor of New York and spend $1 trillion over 8 years on that basis. It's remarkable. And we may be headed to a repeat of that. And as of this moment, at least, you know, Adams seems to be in position to win.
I'm speaking with Harry Siegel of the New York Daily News, the columnist, the op-ed editor at the Daily Beast. We're discussing the mayoralty race on the 22nd of June. That's the day they'll begin counting. When we come back, other major candidates and considerations in these final hours for the primary that will be determinative because the Republican Party doesn't have a vivid presence in New York City or New York State. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.